Hi, people. Welcome back to Dr. Sam's Musings. I hope you had an amazing week. Apologies for the lateness of this episode. It's just one of the busiest periods of the year for me, with Ramadan coming up and dealing with orders for Ramadan boxes and whatnot. If I sound as if I'm still in bed, yes, I'm laying down in bed recording this, and that's one of the perks of having an imperfect podcast. I don't have to worry about fancy equipment. I don't have to worry about, you know, voice quality. I mean, I do worry about voice quality because I don't want, you know, people to struggle with what I'm saying or to think that I'm just a lazy, you know, bum. But what I mean is that, you know, one thing I wanted to prove with this podcast was that you can start anything from just what you have. I don't have any fancy microphone. I don't even know how to edit, you know, my recordings, but here I am. I've surpassed 10,000 plays and whatnot, and I'm just speaking to someone. If there's something that you want to do and you're waiting for everything to be perfect and you're waiting for, you know, all the dots to connect and whatnot, you're wasting valuable time. When I think about the fact that this is the fifth, you know, season for this podcast, and that I would have done, by the end of this season, I'd have done like 50 recordings, and the kind of feedback I get from the episodes and the following that I've garnered, I'm just like, wow, you know. And it really, really keys into what I want to talk about today. And it's just this thing that we care too much about what people think. We care too much. We limit ourselves so much by caring too much what people think. And I was listening to my darling little sister, Hafsi Bono, talk about this, on a reel on her page the other day. And I was like, oh, wow, this keys into what I want to share as well. And she talked about, you know, building your shame resilience. And for me, I think that's what has really, really helped me. I've done so many things fearlessly, over the years that I honestly have no, there's nothing that I want to do that fear or shame can stop me when I set my mind to it. And I'm like, you know, I understand that not everybody has that, but that's why I want to, you know, speak about this today. So when you think about failing at something, or when you think about things not going the way that you want it, when you think about, oh, I want to start this business, but what if it fails? I want to do this, but what if it doesn't go this way? Honestly, most of the time, and I won't say all of the time because I don't make generalizations, but most of the time, the underlying fear is actually of what people will think. Ah, if I fail, they'll laugh at me. If I fail, they'll do this. If I fail, they'll do that. That is the honest truth, unless you don't want to admit it to yourself. If you cannot be confident enough to make certain moves, to do certain things, you will never move, because there will always be people. For me, pretty much everything that I've done, I've had first or at the least third player advantage. I've always done things that were oddities at the time, things that people were not doing, or things that people didn't really understand. And you know, I should have been afraid. I should have been petrified. But I was like, this is what I want to do. There were even times before I became someone that prayed about everything, there were times that I even did it without, you know, committing it to Allah or anything. I would just be totally, you know, convinced about what I wanted to do. And I would go for it, because I was like, if I fail, what will happen? I'll lose money and I won't do it again the next time. I've never been one to care too much about what people will say about things that I want to do. And when you look at all my business models, when I started Fusion, for example, there was absolutely nothing like that. I think the only people that were doing something similar were Le Petit Marché in Lagos, but in Abuja and its environs, there was absolutely nothing like Fusion going on. Then some others came up after Fusion that came and went away and whatnot. But when I started Fusion, I didn't even know anybody in this town. I knew only my husband, his siblings that were in the country, a few in-laws, and one friend. And she was actually a friend of a sister. So I didn't know anybody, but I was like, I can do this. Why can't I do this? If it doesn't work, I'll pack it up, you know. And it's just the same, you know, thing that made me brave enough to say, you know what, I'm not practicing medicine anymore. I'm not interested in this thing. It doesn't make me happy. It doesn't make me excited. I don't want to do it anymore. I was very okay with leaving what seemed like certainty for, you know, uncertainty. So a lot of people had opinions. My dad was not happy at all about me leaving medicine because he's a medical doctor. My mom is a medical doctor. I think he liked the idea of me being a doctor as well. And, you know, he also came from a place of fear. You have a degree. You're good at what you do. Why would you want to pack that aside and go and start a business that you don't even know if it'll generate income for you? You just got married. Do you want to be a dependent on your husband? We raised you to be independent, you know, things like that. So it wasn't just from a place of my dad trying to, you know, kind of map out my life for me. It was more from a place of, look, I don't want my daughter to live an uncomfortable life. You know, it was from a place of fear fueled by love. I get it. But sometimes, and I've sat with a few people that I've had to tell this to, sometimes you honestly have to remember that at the end of the day, it's your life. And if you're miserable and if you're unhappy, those people are not going to be there with you. Those people are not going to be there with you when you put your head on your pillow and you're borderline depressed, which is what would have happened to me if I stayed on the medicine. I mean, it's not the same for everybody, but for me, I found medicine depressing as hell. It was the most depressing thing for me. I would wake up in the morning and be thinking, what can I see that I don't have to go into work today? So for me to get to a point where I was able to finally see, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, this is not for me, was really, really a lot of bravery. I used to have nightmares for years where I would see my colleagues advancing or things like that, and I was left behind, you know, and whatnot. But I was like, no, I will forge another path for myself. I don't want to do medicine, you know. So I think because I'd fought that big battle and I'd sort of won, I made fusion into something very, very, very successful. Alhamdulillah. You know, I just gained my confidence. Like, I can do this. Anything I set my mind to, I can do. And it's the same thing with, you know, Gift Source. When I started the Gift Source, there was no other company in Nigeria that was doing gifting the way that we started to do it. The only person, and I was hugely inspired by her, was Tokpe of T-Lonies. And because I was a client for many years, she used to help me with my gifting before I went into gifting. And she was the only person that I can say, okay, was doing something quite similar. But other than that, I was a complete novelty, especially in the northern space. So again, I'm used to, you know, being a first player or first three player or whatever in any space. So I was like, look, all I have to do is believe in myself. I can push this thing. I can push this thing. I can push this thing. And it's the same with even within the gifts. So many things that we've done, we've had first player advantage. And first player advantage is a good thing. And it can also be a scary thing. Good thing in that you're novel. So people either love it, like they've never heard of it before, they're so excited by it, or they're so, you know, disinterested in it. So for example, when we started doing Ramadan hampers, I dare anybody to come and show me anywhere that anybody was doing Ramadan hampers in Nigeria. It was definitely not a thing. I woke up and I was like, why can't we send out? People used to send out stuff in Ramadan. Of course, we would send out fruit. We will send out, you know, food and things like that. But the kind of committed gift boxes that we do for Ramadan, there was nobody doing things like that at the time. Absolutely nobody. And I knew that it was a love it or hate it, you know, thing. I thought that people would be like, oh, why is she trying to copy Christians and do hampers? But people absolutely love them and they still do. And I built on that first play advantage, worked on staying qualitative and, you know, pleasing my clients. And here we still are. You know, the podcast, the books, my books were just a testament to, if you have a gift inside you, just share it to the world. I wasn't looking to become New York Times bestseller or anything. I wanted to just share the stories in my heart. And Journey sold out. I won't tell you how many copies we published, but Journey sold out. Orchestra didn't do as well because Orchestra was birthed around COVID. So all my marketing plans and everything didn't, you know, work out. And we still have some copies of Orchestra. But the impact that those books have had, could whatever money I could have made from them could never have made me as happy and as satisfied as I felt from when people get back to me after reading my books and they tell me how it changed their lives. The kind of people I've met off the back of my books, the satisfaction and the fact that if I die today, anybody that reads those books, I will still earn blessings because they have valuable knowledge in them. And valuable knowledge is Sadaka Jariye. You know, everything that I do, even this podcast is, you know, it's not like you don't think about it. I'm like, oh God, they'll say this girl has come again. But I'm like, you know, whatever. If nobody listens, I'll stop recording, but I'm going to do it. It's recognizing that you have greatness and value in yourself and being determined to share it. But I always say that it's not about just being falsely, having false bravado. You can not care about what people have to say and just be spewing nonsense. I always say, make sure that you have value. Make sure that you have something great inside you. Don't, because you have an audience, just churn out anything or do anything. Because we see it every day. People have 100,000 followers based on popularity and suddenly they become business coaches or they absolutely have to have a product. We see those things because it works for some people and because those people are qualitative. The ones that are less qualitative wake up and decide, ah, it's not the same 100,000 followers she has that I have. And me too, I'm going to go into skincare. Or me too, I'm going to go into this and that. Whilst they know nothing about it, it's not something that they enjoy. It's not something, and even if they know nothing about it or it's not something that they enjoy, the most, you know, interesting factor is it's not something that they're willing to even learn about or do better or make sure they're qualitative at. It's just a quick opportunity to make a buck. And, you know, those people, it's like a house of cards. It always comes tumbling down. But I've seen people, look at people like, and I don't want to, you know, just mention anybody, but look at Ife of Dang and, you know, how she has used her brand popularity to push her products. But the products are moving on their own because if you have something that is, that people are buying from you or doing for you because of your status or whatnot, you would have a great first sell. You'll sell your first batch fantastically, but people will not come back to buy it. People, it will be a one-off. But look at Ife. Her products are amazing. I use her products for my face. Like, that's all I use now. And I'm a firm fan. Like, they actually work. Like, I'm actually buying a set for my daughter to start her skincare journey. Like, her products actually work. It's not hype. Her products actually work. And she was sensible enough to leverage off, you know, her followership to, you know, sell those products. So that's how it's meant to be. If you have something of value, you bring it out. And if you have, you know, the advantage, you have something that gives you leverage as regards to marketing, you know, access to people. You use that as well. I'm not, you know, naive enough. A lot of things that I do, a lot of things that I'm able to push, you know, it's just because of the social currency that I have. It's because people like Samia. You know, people relate with me on different levels. It might be because, oh, she's such a good Muslim, I really like her. Or when I used to talk a lot about business and things, it might be, oh, she's such a good businesswoman. Things like that. People can relate with you and that can aid you in your business or your whatever. And that's what they call social currency. And I alhamdulillah that I do have social currency. People are willing to support the things that I do. So, but I understand that social currency cannot sustain a business. If you don't have value, if every single client you have is a new client, then you have a problem, for example. So you want to make sure that your product, especially when you have popularity, is qualitative, because when you have popularity and you push out products, there are many people waiting to see it flop. There are many people that want to see it flop. So you have to ensure that you're qualitative. So what I'm really saying is, anything that you want to do, examine your heart. Do you feel like you have value? Do you think like, I can be really good at this thing? And even if you're not really good at it yet, are you willing to put in the work to make sure that you get to excellence? Like for me, I don't like to play small. I think this is the only thing I've ever done that I haven't pushed for, you know, near perfection, that I haven't striven to make sure that it's the best that I could churn out. And it's because I'm trying to prove a point with this podcast. But with everything else that I do, I like things done in a certain way. And that is an attribute of being Muslim. We're people that strive for ihsan. We're people of excellence. You know, so when people call me Extra Sam, I absolutely love it. Like, you cannot come to my house and I will do things wishy-washy. I like to plan and do things nicely and make things pretty and look back and say, you know what, at that time, I did the best with the resources that I had. So whatever it is that you want to do in life. And I wanted to point out the fact that there's no successful business person. There's no successful anybody in anything that hasn't experienced failure, that hasn't experienced things not going how they planned. It's what you do. It's what you do when those things happen that determine what your next step will be. I've had many businesses that I've had to shut down. Do you know how many businesses I've dabbled into? I've had some that I have Instagram pages for businesses that never even took off. And I look back at them, I look at them sometimes, I'm like, oh, Lua, damn it, Lola, this one too. You know, I've had so many businesses that I started and I had to shut down. And I didn't give a rat's ass, excuse my, you know, my French, about what anybody had to say. So you have to believe in yourself. You have to do away with what will people think. Because people are thinking, what will people think as well? So who exactly are people? People are a huge figment of our imagination. Because even if 20 people or 100 people or 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people gather and gossip about you and laugh about a failed business or a failed marriage or a failed anything, when you become successful, those people will still come and cheer you on and claim that they know you. So don't care too much about what people think, what people say. People haven't figured their own, you know, things out. People are still trying to fit to make something of themselves as well. Do the things that you want to do. Those things that burn a hole in your chest from just excitement, go ahead and do it. Gather your resources, gather your, you know, figure out a plan and start. Do something. Do the things that you really want to do. Don't wake up at 60 or 70 years old and be wondering what impact did I make with my life? Because everything that we do has a tendency to be very impactful. You know, I always say that if I die today, I don't think people will even remember me as much for gifts as they will for the dawah and the, you know, stories and things that I write on my page. But my page was primarily created for gifts. I gained the followers that I did because of gifts, you know, and business and things like that. But I saw that I had the opportunity to do something. And I remember somebody tried to shade me one day and she had written, please, are you selling your market or are you now a motivational speaker? Pick one. And me, you cannot throw shade my way and I will not respond. I'm too cheeky. So I said, some of us are a bit of both. I beg, no vex. You know, you can't, for me, people can say whatever they want to say. They can say, this one has come again. They can say, oh, she talks too much about this. Oh, she does this too much. But for me, all that matters is what God thinks and how I feel about it. I don't care because everybody has choices, right? If I decide to wake up every morning and talk about the stock exchange, for example, you have a choice to unfollow me. It's my choice to talk about the stock exchange every day. Your choice is you can decide to unfollow me. You can decide to never read about the stock exchange anymore. That's your choice. That's your prerogative. So use yours if it bothers you so much. I'm not going to put myself in a box or stifle myself because of what one or two or three or 1,000 or 1,000,000 people will think. No, even if it's one person that I make impact on, that person is more than enough. So don't limit yourself. Like, there's so much shame associated with so much. I was talking to someone the other day about how difficult the life of a woman can be, how horrible the life of a woman can be. We're talking about transitions, you know, widows and divorcees. And these are people that have done nothing wrong. A woman leaves a marriage for domestic violence, for example, and she's shamed by even her family for being a divorcee. She's shamed by society because she's a divorcee. And I'm like, are we crazy people? Like, and I always tell people, people will project shame at you. I had a lot of projected shame when my husband married a second wife. People will project shame on you. That's their prerogative. Your prerogative is to refuse to carry that blanket of shame, is to refuse to let it define you. Yes, sometimes, like I was chatting with someone the other day, it's a dagger, and it will sting when it makes contact. But you have the choice to leave it there to continue stinging, or you yank it out and toss it back at the person that, you know, that tossed it your way. You cannot take on projected shame. Projected shame is so easy to dish out. It's so easy for people to expect you to react to things the way that they would react, or to expect you to react or to do things based on their own understanding of the situation. But you know your situation. You know who you are. You toss it back in their faces. I don't do projected shame. It was even, you know, something I wrote about in, I think, Orchestra, my second book. Yes, I don't do projected shame. If you throw it at me, I might be irritated. I might be upset. But best believe I'm going to toss it back at you. I know myself too well to let anybody's opinion or interpretation of anything define me. So whilst they might irritate, when someone projects shame your way, remember that it's their prerogative and it's formed by their opinions of the situation, their understanding of the situation. But you have the prerogative to accept that shame. You have nothing to be ashamed of if you're divorced. You have nothing to be ashamed of if you're a widow and you're struggling and maybe the quality of life that you were used to has dropped. You have absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. You have nothing to be ashamed of if your husband has an extra wife. Sorry, I didn't mean to say extra. If your husband has a second wife, you have nothing to be ashamed of if you haven't reached where you want to reach in your career. You have nothing to be ashamed of if your business didn't do as well as you thought it would and you have to pack it up and look for something else. You have nothing to be ashamed of because life is not, there's no final full stop. There's no, we've reached the destination. Well, you failed. F. No. The only destination is when we die. That's the only destination that ends this life. So as long as you're not dead, the next step might be the most beautiful step, but you might not see it because you're wallowing in shame and you're too concerned about what people will say. If you start another business, you cannot lift your head up because you're like, ah, they will say that this one that failed, that this one has started, who will support me? But you don't even know. You don't know whether that's why God closed that door, because he knows that this next door you're going to walk in is going to be the one that is most beautiful for you, and he didn't want you wasting your time in the other room. So you have to learn to keep moving. Like the most successful people will tell you, just keep moving. You drop the ball, you learn from it, and you apply the knowledge. So failure is really never failure. Failure is, it didn't work out. Okay, what am I learning from this to take on to the next step of my journey? You learn from it, you pack it up. And you know what strength it takes? Like every time I see someone announce that they're shutting down their business, I'm giving them the biggest clap and the biggest hug from behind my scene, because you know the strength it takes to walk away from something. It's not just you know, your businesses are like, it's like you're married to them, or it's like you have a child. Do you know the strength it takes to be like, you know what, this is no longer profitable. This is no longer serving me. Instead of putting on a facade of success or putting on a facade of whatever, I'm just going to stop it now. You know, do you know the strength it takes to do that? It takes a lot of strength to admit, well, this didn't quite work out, but you know, watch this space, something amazing is going to come. Do you know the kind of strength that takes? So don't belittle people that are bold enough and strong enough and confident enough to admit that things, I never say fail. I always say things didn't work out as they had planned, you know, because those people, when they come back, they're usually smarter. Like I shut down the Fusion Lifestyle store, for example, because I had zero knowledge about retail. I just leveraged on popularity, but I had zero knowledge about retail. And whilst it was, if it was money, it was a profitable, you know, venture, but it didn't give me much satisfaction, you know, from many other angles. And after I shut it down, I took a course that literally changed my life. And I was able to bring what I learned from, you know, shutting down the Fusion store and that store and start the Gift Source. Do you understand? Even whilst running the Gift Source, I've had to shut down my kids' version, Pop Kids Gifts, because it just wasn't making any sense. 95% of our clients were online and we were paying rent, buying electricity, buying internet and doing all sorts of things in a shop space. And I'm like, no, this doesn't make any sense. We're going to just stay online. So we built a website and we went completely online. But somebody else might come and think, hey, yeah, she shut down that pop store. The store is not doing so well. You know, things are subject to interpretation. Do you understand? If I cared about what people would think, I would still have the store and be dashing, you know, the owner of the store rent money when I knew deep in my heart that I could do, you know, without it. So don't be afraid of what people will think or say. Use it as, you know, feel to make sure that your next venture, what the next thing that you dabble into, will be extra, extra, extra special. So this is me telling you to do away with the fear. Fear is really, really, really more about what people will think. And do not accept projected shame if things don't go the way you planned, whether, you know, in your relationships, whether in your business, whether in, you know, just things that you wanted to do personally. Like if I started churning out episodes on this podcast and nobody listened for like 3 months. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing this thing again. I'm just talking to myself. I will come out and say, no more podcast, though. Nobody's listening. Like, there's nothing to be ashamed of. It was good while it lasted, but nobody's interested anymore. Maybe the topics I'm speaking on are not things that people are interested in. And I'll pack it up. You know, my second book didn't do as well as my first, but I'm writing my third because, again, what drives people differ. You know, the second book, my second book is actually way better than my first book. It just happened that, you know, it was the marketing and everything happened at a time that I couldn't, after all my initial plans were, you know, just blown to smithereens by COVID, I just didn't have the momentum to push as hard. It's not like it wasn't successful. It's done very well. But when I compared to how many copies of Journey, you know, were sold and whatnot, I'm like, oh, you know, but it's still selling. It's just selling in far more trickles than Journey did. But I'm not going to say, you know, people didn't really buy Orchestra and say, I won't work on the third. No, I'm going to keep churning out the books for as long as I have the stories. So don't let one glitch in the road, you know, make you pack up your bags. Like, just understand that it's still a journey. What lies ahead might be more beautiful and it might even be uglier, and you will surpass that and you'll get to the point where you're like, eh, this is where I was working towards. Now it makes sense. Okay, guys, let me not ramble on too much. This has gone on far longer than I thought it would. But I hope I've made some sense. And I hope that if you have something that is burning in your heart, something that you've always wanted to do, you do not let the fear of failure, the fear of what people will think, or the fear of that shame that will come if it doesn't go the way you plan, I hope that you don't let that stop you. Because on the other side, on the flip side, you could be more successful at it than you ever thought you would. And if you are not, who cares? You'll get up and move on to the next thing. Have an amazing weekend, guys. And I will be back on Wednesday with a fresh episode. Bye.